I think, in the first rolling 12 months. So from like this past September when we launched to like next year, September, we will do around 200,000 revenue. And of that, maybe 40 to 50,000 profits.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews with short-term rental investors willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly, all the bumps in the road of short-term rental investing. And today we've got Mr. Jasper Aiken joining us. Jasper, welcome, my friend.
Appreciate it, Sean. It's like weird to be here because for like the past year and a half, I may have been in Vodacy for like 2 years now, but like for the last year and a half or so, like I've been watching all of these Expert Corner podcasts. I've probably listened to almost every one of them. And like now I'm finally here. Now we finally bought a property and it's going to be cool to share some successes we've seen instead of just listening to them.
It's going to be fun. It is. Yeah. It's a full circle moment, right? You start by listening to it, listen to everybody's story. And now you get to share yours and somebody else gets to listen to yours and learn lessons that you learned along the way. So this is awesome. I know our listeners love these episodes the best because we get the most feedback on them, and they're by far my favorite episodes as well. And so I'm always appreciative of you letting people listen in on our conversation. And so, but before we dive into the short-term rental investing journey, I always like to start with the backstory. Tell us where you're from, what pays the bills, and what got you interested in real estate investing.
So I'm from South Carolina originally. That's where I was born and raised till I graduated high school. After that, I went on a 2-year mission for my church in Arizona. And then after that, I moved up to Idaho and went to Brigham Young University of Idaho. And while I was at BYU, I did some summer sales jobs, knocking doors and selling solar panels. And that allowed me to buy my first house, which is a long-term rental in North Carolina that I bought with my dad. And we still have that house, and it like cash flow is pretty good because 2021 was a really good time for real estate. Our interest rate on it is less than 3%. And so, anyway, we just have like a mom and her kids that live there, and she's been renting from us for ever since we bought it. So, that was kind of my introduction to real estate, buying that house with my dad. And then after that, I started doing mortgages for a little bit. So I used to be a loan officer, and that kind of just piqued my interest even more into real estate as I, you know, helped other people buy houses. Some investors saw some of the numbers that they were, you know, getting and the returns they were getting on their properties, just helping them through their loan processes and stuff. And it just something I always knew I wanted to do as an investment. And then after that, what I do now to pay the bills is I do affiliate marketing, and I have a digital marketing agency. So I make like YouTube videos and send people to different software platforms and get them to sign up with my affiliate link and make commissions that way. And from that, we've been pretty blessed the past couple of years. So we're taking some of the money that we're making from that, and saw your stuff maybe 2 years ago now, I think, and joined Vodacy and was really interested in the whole lifestyle aspect of being able to use your properties, but also cash flow on them, because that's something I couldn't do with the long-term rental that I had purchased in North Carolina with my dad. And, yeah. You know, I've really only seen that property a couple of times. But anyway, just the whole aspect of being able to buy some vacation homes around the country, travel there. I've got a wife and our 2-year-old right now. So it'd be cool to have some places to go as our kids get older and stuff like that. So anyway, that's kind of what brought us into the community and why we wanted to buy a short-term rental. So
that's fun. I knew you were up in Idaho. I didn't know you went to BYU Idaho. Do you know that I went there when it was Rick's? I think, you know, that I was the only Catholic kid, I think, up there. Those that are listening, it's an LDS, private LDS school up there. And when it was Rick's college, I was up there on a basketball scholarship. I think I was the only non-LDS person in the whole school, and it was such a fun place. I love Rexburg, Idaho. Anybody that is from that area, it's one of my favorite places of all time. And so I didn't know that. I didn't know that's where you went to school.
That's the only reason, like, I'm in Idaho now. We live in small town Rigby, just kind of 15 minutes south of BYU Idaho, and I met my wife there. We got married. That's when I got into mortgages, and that's what brought us to Rigby. We have like no ties here, no family here, nothing. It's just like we bought a little house here, and we're trying to get our value out of that.
Oh, it's such a great area of the country. I love it. I mean, in your proximity to, you know, Jackson and Yellowstone and all that stuff that around that is just, I mean, it's a beautiful area of the country, just, but that small town feel, right? It's pretty fun.
Oh yeah. And a side note, I'm getting my private pilot's license right now. And so I've been flying for the past 5 months. And just like you said, it's like the best place to be learning how to fly because there's so many cool backcountry strips you can go land on up in Stanley and up by Jackson. And it's like world-class for backcountry aviation. So just.
So, you know, we've got one of our Vodacy members owns a backcountry guide service up on the Middle Fork of the Salmon. And so I'll have to introduce you to him. And so I have, you know, I have my private license as well.
Oh, you do. No way.
So what I fly around a little 182s once in a while. So it's a lot of fun. What are you training
in? I'm in a 172, but I'm looking to buy a turbo 182 right now as we speak, actually. So anyway.
Nice. We might have to keep this conversation, you know, offline, and we'll start talking airplanes pretty quick. You and I, if we start talking airplanes, anybody that is in the aviation world knows that could take our whole podcast hour. 100%. So, but that's awesome. Awesome, Jasper. So we're in small town Idaho, and we decide we're liking this short-term rental side of life. And I know where you bought your property, and it's not real close to Idaho. And so tell me how you decided where you ended up.
We did some research. Well, first we kind of like analyzed some different markets that we knew we would like to travel to. That was kind of the first, you know, thing we thought about is like, all right, where would be some cool places we could take our family and kids and just a house we could have for a long time. And, we thought like beach market would be cool, but a lot of the beach markets that we liked, if we wanted a house that was close to the ocean, it would be like crazy, crazy out of our price range. And so we started looking like, okay, if not beach market, it'd be cool to own a cabin somewhere. And we looked in Utah, kind of closer to where we're at. We looked up in like Island Park, Idaho, which is just like 30 minutes north of us. And then ended up kind of landing on Blue Ridge, Georgia. Partially because you, Sean, have a house there and you did like a whole year long case study and like the numbers just kind of showed for themselves how good of a market it was. And then two, I'm from South Carolina. So I grew up going to Georgia, Atlanta. I'd actually never been to Blue Ridge, but anyway, we started looking at houses. We saw the prices there were pretty fair compared to some other like Island Park was crazy expensive. Utah markets for like cabins were crazy expensive. So for what our money could do, we looked at Blue Ridge just for that reason. It was within our budget, and there were some really nice houses, a lot of new builds they're putting up in Blue Ridge. And, we thought it'd be cool to have a new house so that we don't have any issues with like AC units or roofs or anything, you know, soon. We'd love to have it for a while before any of that stuff comes up. So, we bought a brand new build. It was just finished when we went under contract on it. I flew out to see it once before we bought it, took my mom and dad up there with me. And, my wife actually stayed back with our daughter, which I kind of felt bad about. She didn't really get to see the house until we bought it and like went out there to get it all set up. But, yeah, I mean, we liked it. You know, my dad's always pretty pessimistic. So he had some like little notes here and there. He's like, I don't know if you want to do it because of this, this, and this. I'm like, those are things I can live with. So anyway, we closed on it, and we actually went and like moved out to it for like 4 months and just lived in it while we got it all furnished and set up and landscaped. And anyway, yeah, so that's kind of what brought us there.
Yeah, so when was that? When did you end up closing on it?
We closed on it in at the end of February of this year, 2025, and then moved out there in March, so like shortly after. Then it took us, you know, 6 months, 7 months to get it ready just because of some of the things we did to it. But yeah.
Yeah. You guys, so you bought it, when you bought it, the brand new build, didn't have any of the outdoor amenities that we're going to be talking about, right? You guys did all that, right? And you took the approach of, and you had the flexibility to move out there, which is pretty fun. You're able to work remote. And so you're like, hey, listen, we're going to, you know, if I can work remote, we're going to bring the family out and live in the property, which can be, have its own challenges, right? Because you're getting a brand new property furnished and set up and you're dealing with a lot of construction. So walk me through some of that, walk me through that process and how that laid out, and some of the challenges involved with it, but also like, how did you, when you saw it originally, because like I always say, guys, the success leaves clues. You guys know that, listen to this. We're going to be talking about a lot of different outdoor amenities with pools and saunas and sport courts and hot tubs and twirly slides and all kinds of stuff that you guys did to this property, a lot of hardscape landscaping. And so when you looked at it, did you, when you were searching for properties, were you looking for a property that could put all that stuff in? Because not every property could have that, right? Or was this like, okay, we're going to do this, and then one thing led to another, and before you know it, you've got this resort style backyard? Or was that always the plan?
It was always the plan. So yeah, it was very well like thought out and methodical the way like we went into it. Blue Ridge and that area has a lot of homes that are like built on the side of a mountain, and they've got these really great views of the Blue Ridge area and Appalachian Mountains. And we just like couldn't afford those kind of houses. A lot of those are more expensive because they've got those awesome views. And so, but because of that, that almost played to our strengths, because a lot of those places, they can't build a pool in the backyard. They can't put in a pickleball court because they're just like, you know, straight down in their backyard. And so we thought, all right, let's, you know, take the, you know, pros of what we got. And we just saw that backyard space. All it was just like a slight slanting backyard down to a little creek. So the creek was pretty cool. We don't have like the views like some of those houses up there have. We weren't on like a river, you know, but we had that awesome, just like huge, you know, acre backyard. And all we had to do was cut a few trees down, and we just had all this space to do stuff. One thing though, we didn't necessarily realize was our septic system was like all right in all those big, what are they called? Just the big tubes or whatever. They were just all in that spot, and they take up like a good like
leach field.
The leach field. Yeah. 50 foot by 100 foot area, which took up a good chunk of the backyard. So as soon as we closed on the house, it was a brand new build, brand new septic tank, never been used. We had a septic company come rip it out and move it to another spot, like down in the woods, further away from the backyard area. Had to pay like, I don't know, $5,000 just to get our septic system moved to be able to do what we were going to do. And that was one thing that was kind of tough to like stomach. Cause it's like, it kind of made me feel like, okay, maybe we don't need to do all this stuff in the backyard. But I'm like, well, if we want to make this place like top 1%, like awesome, awesome Airbnb, we've got to do something with that septic system, because like we can't put a pool in right where we wanted it because of those leach fields, leach lines. So anyway, but yes, we thought it out very methodically and like knew exactly like kind of where things were going to go in the backyard. And then we had like a contractor, and he also has done a lot of landscaping in his career. He kind of helped us put it all together and make it happen. And then a pool builder and couple different contractors, but we had one main contractor who did a lot of our backyard space, which is nice. Just like working with one guy the whole time, pretty much.
Yeah, that is really nice. How big of a deal do you think it was as far as timelines and everything else that you were able to be on site for all that stuff?
I think it was like pretty important, but we were out there for 4 months and we thought it was going to be all done. We thought everything would be finished, pool, pickleball court, the little play set with the swirlies. Like we thought it would all be ready to go. And by the end of the 4 months, we've like been out there. It's kind of tough being away from home. I'm not like quite in my element out there. I don't have like my nice video background for my YouTube video, stuff like that. And so it was tough. And at the end of the 4 months, it wasn't finished yet. Like there was still the contractor saying it's probably going to be another couple months. And we're like, all right, well, we'll just leave, go back home to Idaho where we're like, I can get, you know, more work done, better work done. We're back in our, you know, community with our church and all that. And then, we'll just let them finish it from afar. And I don't know, like being there was really, I think it was like the way we did it was great. Like be there for some of it. We didn't really need to be there for all of it. Cause a lot of the stuff was just those guys working in the backyard every day. And that was honestly a distraction because they had big machines back there and like I couldn't make my videos, stuff like that sometimes. So I think, you know, having some time there, but you don't necessarily need to spend like the whole however long it takes it to like get it all done.
On site. Yeah. And that's why I was asking that. I was really curious what your answer was going to be on that. I kind of feel the same way. Sometimes I feel like sometimes I feel like you're in the way sometimes, right? One, it's hard to do the things you need to do. Second, sometimes you're in the way for the people that are trying to get things done because they're kind of out of their element when they can't just kind of do it without eyes on them. Does that make sense? They want to give the finished product to you, but they don't want you in the middle of the whole thing. Yeah. And sometimes you feel like that. And that's why I was kind of curious how you felt when you were there for that long.
Yeah, I was for sure like annoying to those guys. I could start to see it like months in, you know, after I'd been there and like going outside, like saying, oh, we actually want it this way, not that way. Like, I know they hated me, but it was also good because like I wanted it a very certain way and I was paying them to do it. So like, I'm going to get it the way that I want. So, anyway, yeah, I agree with that. That was good to give them, you know, let them take their expertise and like do their job. But at the same time, you know, manage them a little bit, but you don't want to like micromanage them and make them feel and hate you, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a fine line, right? It's a balance for sure of trying to say, hey, listen, we need to do it a certain way. I need to catch certain things if it's going to be wrong. I'm glad that I'm there to see it before it gets too far down the road. At the same time, it's like, hey, listen, I need to give them space to like go work right as well and be able to do the things that they're doing. So that's really nice to be able to have one contractor for the majority of it. You're not managing a whole bunch of different subs while you're out there. How about when you guys decided to move out? Did you guys decide to move out before it was furnished? Because you bought a brand new house that had no furniture yet. So, right. So when you guys moved out, it was probably bare bones.
Yeah, it was empty. So I moved out there first for like 2 weeks and then my wife came and followed and flew out with my daughter. But, I just got like a little like foam topper, you know, 3-inch foam topper from Walmart and slept on that on the floor for a little bit until we got our beds in and the rest of the furniture. But we were there for a solid month sleeping on that foam topper on the floor until
good thing you guys are young and healthy and in shape. I feel like my back would be done. I wouldn't be able to stand up straight if I did that.
It wasn't very comfortable, but I've slept on worse. So been camping a lot in my life, but it was fine. It just took a while for like furniture to start coming in, and we didn't, one thing I wish that we did different is like getting started on getting that stuff in sooner. But it's kind of hard like when you like, we didn't for sure know, like I wanted to make sure the loan was going to go through and we were going to close on the house before I got all that stuff like fully lined up. Cause I didn't want to like do a bunch of legwork and then like maybe something falls through with my financing and I don't buy the house. Yep. And like, anyway, so it kind of like had to happen that way. But going forward, now that I know like my financing's in good place, like when we buy future properties, we would definitely get design and, you know, all the furnishing and stuff started before we close, so that by the time it closes on, we can get it soon after and like just speed up the process of getting everything set up. But
I was just talking to Mike, one of our designers, and we were just talking about that, and we were saying it's really hard because, you know, they're about an 8-week process right now, and it is like from design to procurement and order and install, it's like 8 weeks, right? And that's about as fast as they can do it right now. And I was saying, how can we speed that up? Because we buy these properties, we want to get them like in service as soon as possible, but we buy them and then we're waiting for 2 or 3 months before we're launching them. And that's without construction. That's just design stuff, right? That's just design, artwork, and furnishings. And we were talking and he's like, the only way is really to do it, order it sooner. But then, like you said, it's a risk because you do all this stuff on something you're under contract on. Sure, you can save yourself a month, but because you're usually under contract for 30 or 45 days, but something happens and all of a sudden you've got a home that's designed and you paid for and you've ordered stuff and you don't buy the house. I mean, it is kind of just one of those things that is part of the process. And it is one of the frustrating parts of the process as well, even if everything goes smooth. And historically, setup does not ever go smooth. And it is always, there's always stuff that, especially these types of markets, stuff doesn't show up. It's hard to get delivered. There's all kinds of weird things that happen throughout that setup phase. And so it just delays that process. And now you had construction that was going longer than that, but it was also, but you know, I mean, if you're just a buyer, one of the things is, you know, the pros and cons of this game are, you know, we're setting up pretty cool properties and they're really fun to have once they're all done, but they take a minute to get set up and they take a minute to navigate that aspect of it. So it's interesting that you brought that up, and I appreciate that, because it can be a process where you're just waiting, right? And you're like, man, I wish I would have done this sooner, but do you really? Because it's taking a risk if you do it sooner.
Yeah, 100%. And like I said, like all the stuff in the backyard is what really took us the longest. So like having the furniture a little bit delayed was like whatever, because like the house wasn't even ready yet anyway. So that was the least of our concerns. It was the stuff in the backyard, the landscaping and all that was what was the beast that took a long time. So,
yeah. And again, I was telling Jasper before we hit record, we have a property pretty close to Jasper's, and we were looking at going to it in the next couple of weeks. And my kids want to go to Jasper's property instead of ours. So I said, they don't want to stay at our property anymore. They want to go to the Bigfoot cabin.
I'm sorry, Sean. Sorry to do that to you.
No, don't be sorry. That's what we want. It's going to be, this sucker is, this is one of the funnest properties, and what you guys did to bring it to life and everything. It's just, I mean, it turned out beautifully, but it was, talk to me about like the whole experience and where you guys, like, we always talk about, hey, listen, we want to create these amazing experiences. We want to have the, you know, create it, like figure out our target audience. I mean, it's pretty clear who your target audience is, which is a really good thing in marketing. It's got a little something for everybody. You mentioned it, and I don't know if anybody, I mean, I'm sure some people picked up on it, but I want to highlight it, is some of the biggest things in this market are being on water and or having long range views, right? And so, and you mentioned, hey, a lot of those things that are on the bigger rivers or that have the long range views, they're on hillsides, and that's what gives them those views. And you said, okay, how can I use and compete and use a competitive advantage? And they can't really do what I'm going to be able to do. I don't have what they have, but they're not ever going to have what I have either. And which is intentionally how you set up this backyard. This is one of those properties that you go there, you can just literally hang out and have fun there the whole time, right? And so talk to me a little bit about going through the process of who that target audience was and what you guys were really trying to set up.
So I'm a young family, you know, my wife and I, and then our 2-year-old daughter, and we plan to have more kids. And so that's ultimately who we wanted to set it up for, because we thought like, all right, us first, it's our house, you know, we want to go use it, you know, once a year or whatever. And so let's just kind of match who we are. So we set it up for families. It's got 3 master suites that have like king beds and their own bathrooms. And then it's got 1 bunk room that has queen, 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 queen. So you can fit like 8 kids in there, 2 in each bed if you wanted to. And so it's perfect for like 3 families that each have a couple kids. And that's pretty much all the people who have been renting it from us are like a couple young families, friends that are coming together, and they have some kids, and the kids take the bunk room, the adults take the master suites. And anyway, it's perfect for that type of demographic. And then when we first moved out there, we're going to do everything like the pool and the pickleball court and the sauna and hot tub. But like, we didn't really have a theme or anything, and we didn't necessarily want to do one, or we weren't going to do one. But as you know, in Blue Ridge, there's a Expedition Bigfoot, which is a Bigfoot museum. And we went there, and I've always been interested in Bigfoot. I always watched Finding Bigfoot on Discovery Channel. And we went through there, and I'm like, I started doing some research, typing in like Bigfoot cabin or a Sasquatch cabin. There's nothing in Blue Ridge. And I'm like, there's this awesome museum here, but nobody's themed their cabins after Bigfoot. And then my marketing mind started spinning, and I'm like, imagine if we created an experience like you were staying in Bigfoot's cabin while he was on the run from the US government. They chased him out of his house, and he needs somebody to go watch after his house for him while he's on the run. And it just clicked. Yeah. And we're like, all right, we're doing Bigfoot cabin. I told my wife, she wasn't like fully for it at the beginning, but then she's like, all right, this would be pretty cool. And then, so anyway, we then had to kind of switch plans with our designer a little bit. And we then told her, hey, everything we want is going to have to be Bigfoot artwork, pillowcases, curtains, like everything. We want it all Bigfoot. And anyway, so everything in the house is Bigfoot, like from the bedspreads to the curtains to the little night lights in the wall. We've got a whole like research slash work table where somebody could put their laptop and work. But it has like a pin board with all the sightings of Bigfoot in the area, and they all come to the middle at our property. So it shows like that's where he lives, and like he's been sighted in all these places around it. And we bought all the books on Bigfoot. So we've like lined that table, and underneath the glass of the table, we put a bunch of newspaper articles about Bigfoot and all the artwork we got custom made. I used AI to generate a lot of it, and we got to put it on these big canvases and put them in every room. And so anyway, within the pickleball court, we got these like tiles made, they're called VersaCourt, and you put them on top of your concrete slab, and it's like a better, more like, it's a more true bounce for pickleball to use these little tiles that have these little like holes in them, and the water like runs out of them a lot better. But you can get custom logos put on these big, huge, you know, courts. And so we got a big old footprint on our pickleball court, and, you know, got a big old neon sign, put it up on a, like a, you know, bush wall, kind of like, lattice bush wall behind our hot tub. So like, you know, Bigfoot's behind them while they're in the hot tub. Just, we were thinking of like all the places you could take really cool pictures at the property. And we wanted to make every zone, the pool, the pickleball court, the hot tub, sauna, have something Bigfoot so people could take pictures everywhere and then throw them up on their social media. Just like wanted to create a really cool experience that was like Instagrammable, I guess would be the word, you know, something that would just sell itself because it was so unique and cool. And we got these like custom, we got a custom built chainsaw carving 8 foot tall Bigfoot that weighs 1,000 pounds out of like a tree stump that this wood carver carved. And we got little yard signs, Bigfoot sauna, Bigfoot court, Bigfoot swimming hole, all in the backyard to mark the different little fun things to do. So anyway, yeah, it's all Bigfooted out. And then our description of our property, a lot of people on Airbnb, they do like 5-bed, 4 mm-hmm. bath, you know, luxury home in Blue Ridge. And they just start with like really just generic stuff. But we made our description a letter from Bigfoot. So it starts by saying, Bigfoot. Dear humans, the government's on to me again, and I need somebody to go watch after my cabin for me. And so like, we've just kind of done something very different, very unique from like any of the other houses we had seen up there. And it's paying off big time so far. So
it is such an amazing example. And again, anybody listening, you've got to do yourself a favor. You got to go click on the Airbnb link in the show notes and read it, read the description, read how this stuff looks together. Look at the photos, see how this story is told, because that story now is creating this experience that the people are like, this is what my kids are like, man, this stuff's awesome. My son loves Bigfoot. Everywhere we go, he buys a Sasquatch sticker. Of any outdoor area that you go to, you know, there's always the Sasquatch stickers, and he finds them and loves them. And he buys every, you know, all of his, I don't know how many Sasquatch t-shirts in his thing. He's like, dude, this would be so fun. Cause he just loves that story. And it even where, you know, like, again, I there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff that you're listening, go look at this listing, but even go read how Cassidy responds to all the guests on the reviews. It is so funny. I'm reading the reviews and seeing like Cassidy, like they're like, we had such an amazing time. The host was so awesome. And Cassidy will say, hey, Jasper, thanks so much for, we loved hosting you. I'll let Bigfoot know you loved his home. Like, he'll be so happy to hear that. Like stuff like that. It's just that you take it all the way through, and it's so fun, and it's such a great example of taking this beautiful home and these amazing amenities and then creating a story around it where everybody can dive in and say, hey, this is pretty memorable. And so it's such an amazing job of doing that. And I would encourage everybody to go click on that. And then if you're in the area, go try to stay at it. My kids want to go stay at it, so I tried to stay at it. I was looking at, not tried yet. I'm looking at the calendar to see when we can go, and there's not a lot of spots left. So it looks like that launch was all right. So let's talk me a little bit through the launch, because it, all of this is done for a reason, and tell me the results of some of that stuff.
So we took y'all's advice and started our pricing low. We wanted to get just people coming, stay in, get our first, you know, 10 reviews like you guys teach. And so that's what we did. Like, started our pricing at average about like $350 a night. And then the reason we started that low is because like that was pretty like, but like we took the average of that market, which we now know like probably shouldn't have looked at, because our house is definitely different than a lot of houses in that market. But like, started low, and it was just like first day we got like 4 bookings that we put it up on Airbnb. It's like, all right, that's probably too many bookings. That means we're priced a little low. So just little by little, we bumped our prices up, and now we've kind of found a sweet spot, and we're like about 3 months in, or really only 2 months in, because we launched at the end of September. And we are now priced at about $1,000 a night for weekends and about $600 a night for weekdays. And that obviously fluctuates. We use Price Labs to do our pricing adjustments and stuff. But yeah, so we've come a long way, and like we've bumped up our prices quite a bit, and we're still getting bookings. Every weekend up there is booked. And then a lot of like the weeks are booked. So far, we're at 85% occupancy, which we're thrilled about. I thought it would be a lot less than that. And then, yeah, we're booked, like some months next summer are fully booked already. And we're in December of 2025 right now, like June, July, August, like they're almost like lights out booked already.
They're gone. Yeah. I was looking at that. In fact, I was wondering if you blocked any of that, because I'm like, man, I could see a couple orphan days here and there. I'm like, no, it doesn't look like a block. It looks like those are all bookings.
They're all bookings. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, I know like these first couple months of the new year might be a little bit slower with occupancy, just because not as many people might be traveling. But like spring, summer, fall, like this fall that we've launched has been like lights out booked. And, you know, I think in the first rolling 12 months, so from like this past September when we launched to like next year, September, we will do around 200,000 revenue. And of that, maybe 40 to 50,000 profit after all of our expenses. Mm-hmm. And then year two, now like once we, now that we have our prices fully adjusted as high as we think they're going to go, maybe they can go even higher. I think year two will cash flow after all expenses between 80 to 90,000 a year, which you have to take that with a grain of salt, because we put $500,000 worth of our own money between down payment and all of that landscaping and furnishing and everything into the property. So to put, you know, 500,000 in to get, you know, first year, let's say 50,000 net, mm-hmm. you know, that's only a 10% cash on cash, I think is the math there.
Yeah.
And, but year two, I think it'll probably be close to double, what year one is. And so that's maybe closer to a 20% cash on cash return, which in real estate is pretty average, I would say. You know,
No, that's pretty damn good. Yeah. I target 4 to 8% cash on cash returns. Really? And so 20% cash on cash on a quality asset is really, really good, because you're also, what you're really making your money on, your cash on cash is going to be probably the lowest, the denominator on the biggest returns you're getting, because you're also getting note pay down, which is forced appreciation, right? You're getting equity from somebody paying that note off every single year for you. You're also getting appreciation in a market like that. That's a quality asset, quality area. You're going to get, you know, 4 to 6% appreciation. So say somewhere in that 5% a year appreciation, but also you got some major tax advantages as well. And so by the time you calculate all that out, a home that has 20% cash on cash and stabilizes at 20% cash on cash is a really, really good asset, especially if it's a quality asset. Now, long-term rentals in more depressed markets or whatever else, what there is, Jasper, is there's an inverse relationship between cash on cash return and the quality of the market and the asset. So normally the higher cash on cash return, so when you're starting to talk about 15, 20, 25% cash on cash returns in real estate, usually you're talking about C and D areas, right? You're talking about lower quality areas. You're talking about some of the, like you if you get if you're starting to get closer to 30, 35% cash on cash return, you're talking about kind of the slums, right? You're talking about being a slumlord, because there's got to be a trade-off there. If I'm going to buy worse properties, I need more cash flow. So quality assets in quality areas, it's not, breaking 20% cash on cash is really, really good. Like there's so many people that actually don't calculate the numbers right. So you hear higher numbers. The reality is most of these really good markets, you know, a good cash on cash return in a quality asset could be, you know, 5 to 8%. And that's what we target on a lot of them. Mine that is that stabilized and is doing really, really well for us is getting a 14% cash on cash return. And so, and we're stoked about it. The one that's the one that's down the road from me, and you stabilize at 20%. It's awesome. And I have no doubt you will, because you guys are going to be the numbers you just shared. You guys will make it right to the top of that market. There will mark my words. I don't love to just talk about projections. I love to have you back in less than a year in September, and we'll talk about the actuals. And I bet we'd be talking about being the number one 4-bedroom in that market. And there's a lot of really nice properties. This is a class A market. The Blue Ridge market is a class A market. So you're competing against a lot of really nice properties, and you're going to come on. And my guess is, my money is on, you guys are going to be the number one property in that market for a lot of the reasons that we just talked about. But man, talk about a great launch. Talk about, you know, and I think you have even more room to push those prices based on the calendar that we're looking at, you know, but that's the name of year one. Year one is never going to be your most profitable year, because you're really trying to launch, optimize, maximize, and kind of stabilize at the highest price possible. And so, like, even like right now, and I think you are, and we've talked about this a little bit, but really pushing those prices beyond this next summer and the fall, and really trying to see what the consumer is willing to pay in that market, because like your summer's booked, which is really a good position to be in. You know, you're profitable, you know, you're making money. It's been a good investment. Now let's start recouping some of that money. Did you, one of the things we talked about is cash on cash. One of the big ones, one of the big savings that first year, especially, is the tax side of life. Were you able to capitalize on that, with the taxes, or are you going to, I know you haven't filed yet this year, but are you planning on having a nice tax savings for this year with the purchase of that one?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the highlight of the year for me, because I hate paying taxes just as much as everybody else. And, we got a cost segregation study done like last month with Troy Petrie. He's one of y'all's recommended partners. And he says it was one of the highest cost seg studies for bonus depreciation he has ever seen, if not the highest, because of all the, like, Trump's big, beautiful bill is back, obviously. So 100% bonus depreciation's back. But on top of that, all those things we did in the backyard, he can throw all of that into the cost seg study. And it came back to be $610,000. And wow, that's going to save me this year almost like $300,000 that I don't have to pay in taxes. So huge, huge save. Like, just not even about the cash on cash anymore, just like the tax savings. That's cash, literal cash back in my pocket.
Back in your pocket. Exactly. So you just recouped. Yeah, you just recouped 300-ish of the 500 you have down. I mean, that's the power of this type of understanding the whole picture, right? And being able to say, listen, I just, you know, so now calculate that cash on cash off the 200 you're going to have into the property, right? Just because you got that, you know, because the 300 is actually money back in your pocket, right? That is, I know it's less money you were going to be paying it one way or the other, unless you bought this property. Now you buy the property and you're able to use it for this property and keep that money in your pocket and put it toward the property. I mean, it's a massive, massive lever on the return. And so that makes me so happy. Troy did my cost seg in Cherry Log as well. He's such a rock star. Love him. In fact, Misty was just on. Troy and Misty are one of our, does a lot of cost segs for us, but they have a lot of properties and do an amazing job with their properties as well. But they're it's fun when you hear it's one of the highest, if not the highest, that they've ever done, that you're like, yes, you feel like you hit the lottery. But a lot of it is for that the money you put in, right? There was a lot of money that you put into it, but it also, you were able to get basically probably reduces your taxes almost down to nothing when you buy something that big, which is awesome. Right.
And then another thing that makes me feel good is we've had like two people offer to buy our house from us already. And we've only owned it for like 8-9 months now or 10 months. Yep. And people have offered $1.1 million. I don't know how serious they were, right? Like, we didn't ever like entertain it, but We had somebody reach out to us through Airbnb and said they will pay $1.1 million for our house that we bought for $830,000. Now, we put a bunch of stuff into it and like money. And so rightfully, the property value should go up. But it just makes me feel good that if we ever needed to sell for whatever reason, you know, we have equity in the house now. So anyway, that is well, appreciation has been awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. This happens a lot, and I don't know that I've ever had it brought up on the conversation on the actual podcast so people could listen in. It is a really common thing that happens when you have a really good property is people offer to buy your property. And so you've always feel like you feel good that you've got that, like there's a buyer pool out there when somebody stays in these nice properties, like on a regular basis, when you have a really good property, you're going to, that won't be the first or second time you hear that. And it won't be the last, right? You're going to keep hearing that. And it happens way more often than people think when you have a really good property is people are like, hey, I want this. We'll buy it from you. What do you want? Right. And most of the time they're willing to pay more than market value because they fall in love with it. Right. And they're willing to say, hey, listen, this is exactly what I want. Not that we want to sell them, but it's kind of nice to know that. And it's kind of nice to know there's people out there and who knows when, if somebody makes you the right offer, you're like, okay, I'll go do it again because you know, you're overpaying for this. Like I've told somebody one time, I said, that's way overpaying for the property. Like, I don't care. I just want it now. Right. And so, like this is what we want. I don't want to go recreate it. I just want it. And it's pretty funny how that happens more often than people think. And I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast. I'm glad to hear that you brought that up in our conversation. So Jasper, this has been awesome, man. So again, as always, you guys, success leaves clues. It's why we have these conversations, but it's also why we put all of these properties in the show notes so you can pull them up, check them out. Go, I mean, this one is one of those that you just need to dissect the listing, read the description. It's awesome. It's well-written. It's fun. It's not like saying, hey, listen, we've got Bigfoot cabin and we're going to put some Bigfoot artwork around and that's it. Like there, you guys did a great job of leaning into the entire story and keeping the story going. Like I love again how Cassidy answers all the reviews as if she's, you know, working for Bigfoot and responding on behalf of him. Right. And it's so fun. And so, as I always wrap up, one of the things I always like to say, and you can't go back to your two younger self because you're already so young, but if you had to go back at like property number two, what are some of the lessons you learned? What would you do different? What are there pieces of advice that you give somebody that's thinking about this? They don't know what to do. Like they're just to try to, you know, put them down the right road or just avoid some of the mistakes that you wish you would have avoided. Something that comes to mind there?
Yeah. Like knowing my personality now, which I didn't fully know when we went into this first one, that I was going to be so like micromanaging on everything. And like, I want to be like a big part of all of it and things done a very specific certain way. I would probably just design the property myself, to be completely honest. And I do have a decent eye for design. Like I've done web design. I do that as part of that's my main offer in my marketing agency. So I do have a little bit of an eye for design. And then Pinterest can give you a million design ideas to make things look good too. Mm-hmm. But I would personally design myself on the next ones that we do. I think that would save us a lot of money, not having to pay design fees and just kind of get exactly what we want and not have to go through. There was a lot of stress working with our designer. So I would personally just work and do it myself. If you know you're that type of person that is going to be very like hands-on and you want to have everything done a very certain way, I'd probably design it. Now, if you're the type that's like, I've got a bunch of money and I just want this as a passive investment and I'm going to have a manager managing my property for me and I don't even care to see it as long as it's set up nice, then sure, have a designer all day, every day. But you can save some money not doing that and like get things done exactly how you want them. And then on top of that, like having a good contractor, if you're going to be doing anything landscaping related, anything building, construction, whatever it is, we had one guy who was really, really good. But some of the other guys that we kind of had hired out for other things were a little bit shady. And I don't know if it's just that area, but we had occasional guys, like one guy came out and he started working on some things like a little shed building that we needed built and over our pool equipment. He had handcuffs on each arm, like he had just come from prison or something. You know, we had guys that we paid and, then they, you know, got arrested the next week and they didn't finish the job, but we had paid them all the money already. Just stuff like that. I'll have to talk to you about later because those are some really funny stories. Yeah. But, just having somebody that's like really good, it cannot be hit on enough, like really vet out your contractors. maybe it's just that group of people. Those kind of guys can sometimes be some shady individuals. So really just like maybe interview a lot of different companies and for one, shop price, but price might not always be the best indicator. If something's the cheapest, it might not always be the best. And we kind of learned that with some of these guys. So anyway, we would do something different with that or just really vet our contractors who are going to be doing stuff at our property a lot heavier going forward. And then, yeah, just like now knowing the time frame of everything for a property like that, we probably could have planned some things a little bit better and maybe sped that process up a little bit more, knowing some things that we know now. But also just like setting better expectations for ourselves to like know, all right, this is how many months we're going to have to front the mortgage payment on this place. To be completely honest, like my income, I get paid like once a month. Mainly I just kind of pay myself out once a month for my business. And, for like towards the end of that process, like we had a good amount of money saved up to put into this, but not nearly as much as we thought as it ended up costing. And so a lot of months, like everything I made for that month would just go straight back into all the contractors and everything we were doing. And I threw stuff on credit cards in order to be able to cover some of the costs. I knew we had to finish it out. Like I wasn't going to cut corners and like not do these things. So I'm like, all right, I ran up a couple different credit cards and it's now all paid off and we're good. But like there was some stress there. So I would probably save more money beforehand because I don't want to have to like go into debt on credit cards in order to pay for stuff, you know. So that was just pretty stressful for a couple months there towards the end as we started getting low on funds. So anyway, those are a couple things that I've done
differently. That's awesome. I mean, congrats on being as resilient as that was, because that's hard to do, especially to get it to the finish line like you did in the and not cut corners on the details in the process when you're starting to get to that pinch point, you know. And it's so true. The bigger the job, the more you're going to be doing it, you know, the bigger the contingencies you have to have for money and time. And you have to make sure that you're really adding those contingencies in to make sure you're going to, you know, give yourself that buffer to get to the finish line. Cause you might be thinking you're giving yourself a way bigger buffer than you are. And I love the advice of saying, hey, listen, know yourself, know what you're good at, know what you're not good at, know what things are going to bug you, and make sure that if you want to be involved in things, you do it right. And it can save you some, sometimes even time, right. And not just the money. Is saying, hey, listen, if I'm going to be so involved in this, why don't I just do it, right? On your side, on the design stuff, like you guys, you are creative and you're telling the story and you want it to put together a certain way. You have that skill set to do that. And then vetting those contractors, it is one of the hardest things to do, is go into area that you don't live, you don't know anybody, you don't have any recommendations. And so, and it's hard too. And in your guys' case, where you've got a realtor that you're working with, those are really good resources to ask for referrals. But a lot of times where you're managing your own property, you didn't have that management partner to ask as well. But a lot of those management companies that think they're going to be managing the property, or you're interviewing them too, you're asking some of them, those local, you know, realtors, local management partners, if they've got some of those recommendations, because those can be good resources as well, moving on and in different areas when you're not there. Because it is, you're right, it's a good contractor is worth their weight in gold, and they make things so easy and you can trust them. And then, but you get the wrong ones, man, it can be just a nightmare sometimes. And so, and if you get the ones that show up with handcuffs on that look like they just broke out of prison, that's even a little sketchier. So, awesome advice, Jasper. I love this conversation. These are my favorite conversations. I appreciate you joining me, my man. This has been really fun. Again, those of you that are listening, you got to check out this one. This is one of those that I'm like, go click on the Airbnb link and check this sucker out. It's awesome. And super excited to hear the actuals after year one. I know what we're all projecting, and sometimes we're actually projecting low on properties like this. So that's what my hope is for you guys. And I have no doubt that the resilience, the money you put in, the time and effort you put in is going to pay off. This is going to be one of those really fun properties that we're going to be talking about for a long time. So congrats on putting it together, and excited for you guys.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, those of you listening, Well, you spent a little bit of time with us today. Hopefully you learned something. Hopefully you got as much out of these conversations as I do. We always appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. And the things I ask you at the end of every episode. First one is, you guys know I don't run ads. I don't run any sponsorships. The only way this show grows is if you guys like it and you want to share it with somebody else that you think might like it as well. And so give us a like or a thumbs up on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. If you have more than 30 seconds, those things help us immensely as well and help this show grow and get other people that can, we're hopefully helping people walk into this game with their eyes wide open, not just sharing and sugarcoating everything. We're sharing real stories with real investors, navigating this game on a successful high level and sharing that with all of you so that we can kind of all raise the bar in the short-term rental space. And so after you do that, the final most important thing I ask you to do at the end of every episode and every single day is pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.